Podcasting from the Deep Sage 9 Observatory in the high desert near Taos, New Mexico, this is the Deep Sage 9 Starcast. Welcome back to the Starcast for the week of March 29th, 2026. I'm your host, Jay Schaefer, and with me is my co-host, Mike Glowinski. Howdy, Mike. How you doing today?
I'm great. How are you, Jay?
Doing great. Can't beat the weather for the end of March, that's for sure. And speaking of weather, how is our space weather looking over for the next couple days?
Well, Jay, we've got 8 sunspot groups that are facing the Earth right now, and we're watching 2 in particular. Sunspots 4401 and 4405 both have the beta-gamma magnetic fields that could unleash an M-class solar flare. Yesterday, in fact, sunspot 4405 did produce a very long-lasting flare, over 7 hours, peaking at about M1.3. However, it was only just turning toward Earth when it erupted, so that flare itself is not Earth-directed. We have a forecast of 50% chance of M-class flares over the next 48 hours and a 10% chance of X-class flares in that time. So at mid-latitudes, NOAA forecasts a 20% chance of active geomagnetic conditions today, jumping up to 40% tomorrow. For higher latitudes, NOAA forecasts a 25% chance of a severe storm today, going up to 60% tomorrow. So what's happening in the night sky this week, Jay?
Well, first off, we're looking toward the full moon this week. On the evening of April 1st, the full pink moon will be positioned just below the bright star Spica. Now, Spica is a brilliant blue-white giant, but even then, the moonlight might be a bit overwhelming. So if you're having trouble spotting it, here's a tip. You just use your finger to block out the moon's disk, and Spica should pop right into view. The official crest of the full moon occurs at 2:12 UTC on April 2nd, which for those of us in the USA, in the central time zone, that's about 9:12 p.m. on the evening of April 1st. But the real buzz in the community right now is about Comet C2026A1 MAPS. Sky watchers have been tracking this one closely because it's a sun grazer, a comet that sweeps incredibly close to the sun. These objects tend to be in their absolute brightest during their perihelion, which is their closest point to the sun. And for this comet, that happens on April 4th and 5th. So there's always a bit of drama with sun grazers. We have to see if it survives the intense solar heat and doesn't fall apart and get basically blown apart. But if it does pull through its perihelion passage, it should become quite a sight over our sky right around Easter. In fact, some people are already calling it the Easter Comet. So I've been getting my little C-Stars smart telescope ready just in case we get a good show for that comet. So, Mike, what's happening for us in space news?
Jay, in the major spaceflight news this week, NASA is officially entering the next high-stake phase of the Artemis program. After years of preparation following the uncrewed Artemis 1 mission back in 2022, we are finally on the doorstep of putting boots, or at least humans, back in lunar orbit. NASA confirmed just this month that the Artemis II spacecraft is ready for its final rollout to the launch pad at Kennedy Space Center, and the crew is there now. They've been in medical quarantine for the last 2 weeks. If everything remains on schedule, the astronauts will launch aboard the Orion spacecraft atop the massive SLS rocket on April 1st, and they have 2-hour launch windows starting on April 1st going through April 6th, depending on the weather. Now, this won't be a landing on the moon just yet. Instead, this is a 10-day mission to fly around the moon and back, and it marks the first time that humans will have left Earth orbit since the end of the Apollo era over 50 years ago. Now, the roadmap doesn't stop there. NASA just released an updated moon-to-Mars architecture that lays out an ambitious triple-phase plan for the next decade. Following Artemis II, they're targeting 2027 for Artemis III, a mission that is focused on testing the integrated systems in Earth orbit. And there, the Orion spacecraft will test docking with landers, lunar landers produced by both SpaceX and Blue Origin. Now, our actual return to the lunar surface is currently slated for the Artemis IV mission in early 2028. The ultimate goal, according to recent NASA announcements, is to transition from these one-off expeditions to a permanent human foothold. This includes the development of Space Reactor 1 Freedom to test nuclear propulsion in deep space and a plan for at least one crewed surface landing every year starting in 2028. By the early 2030s, NASA and its international partners, including JAXA and the Italian Space Agency, aim to have semi-habitable infrastructure and pressurized rovers on the moon, effectively turning it into a stepping stone for the first human missions to Mars. And in other news, we're excited about a new study published in the monthly notices of the Royal Astronomical Society that identifies 45 potentially habitable planets in the so-called Goldilocks zone. A team of researchers led by Lisa Kaltenegger of the Carl Sagan Institute at Cornell identified 45 rocky exoplanets that orbit inside their stars' habitable zones, where temperatures are just right to allow liquid water on their surfaces. No, this doesn't mean we've found water there, only that if it does exist, it won't all be ice or vapor. Kaltenegger's team used data from the European Space Agency's Gaia mission, which was retired a year ago, as well as data from the NASA Exoplanet Archive to create better estimates of how much energy each planet receives from its host star. This is one of the key factors determining whether an exoplanet is in the so-called Goldilocks zone of habitability. And the team didn't just look at what planets might host life. They also asked what the actual limits of habitability might be, and they chose to include worlds that push the boundaries in their catalog. Among other variables, they considered planets with elliptical orbits. And it's going to take a lot more research before we can define what the range of orbital eccentricity is that is tolerable for living things. And I think eccentricity is a great point to pivot now to our topic for the week, Jay.
Yeah, so for our topic today, in honor of April Fool's Day this week, we would thought we'd go down into the wormhole of bad space jokes and riddles. And just because some listeners have asked us why we are so serious. And my answer to that is because it's the brightest star. I thought about going down the misinformation highway and doing a fake news story for April 1st, but I think that we're kind of saturated in the world, especially of science misinformation right now. So I thought we'd make it even more just silly and somewhat stupid. So, Mike, your turn.
All right, Jay, why can't you trust an atom?
I don't know, Mike. Why can't you trust an atom?
It's because they make up everything.
Okay. How do we know that the moon is going broke?
Don't know. How do we know that, Jay?
Because in 2 weeks from now, it's going to be down to its last quarter.
Oh. You know, Jay, I only know one good joke about the singularity, but I can't tell you it.
All right. Okay. So a photon checks into a hotel. The bellhop asks, "Can I take your luggage?" The photon says, "No thanks, I'm traveling light."
All right, I got two for you. Twofer for you. What is a space technician's favorite key on a computer keyboard?
Don't know.
That's the space bar.
Oh, that's the astronaut's favorite, too.
And you know why all the astronauts use Macs?
No, why?
You can't open Windows in space.
Okay. All right. Computer humor. You'd think that was like your job. How did the rocket get that job? He was fired from the last one, and but the new position gave him a great boost.
Oh. What did the Martian say to the other Martian?
I don't know. What did
Nice weather, isn't it? Very reddish.
Okay, I don't quite get that one, but all right. I met a guy who's studying all the different moon phases, and I told him, "You sound like a bit of a lunatic."
Oh. What does a cosmologist use to keep their hair in place?
Dark matter?
Constellation spray. It's out of this world.
Oh
Really
man.
feel like we need a cosmetologist joke in there.
Well, I think I'll try to come up with a couple more. How about a knock knock joke? Knock knock.
Who's there?
Uranus.
Uranus, who?
Uranus is not visible tonight, but I can point you in the general direction.
Oh,
Okay, we're not going to do any more Uranus jokes because
that's really a good idea. They
they stink.
stink.
All
Oh,
right. Your turn.
a group of stars is called a constellation. A group of galaxies is called a cluster. What do you call a group of physicists studying both?
Don't know.
A cluster physicist.
Oh, I get it. All right. Why did the astronaut break up with his girlfriend?
Why, Jay?
She needed more space and he needed more launch thrust.
Oh. What's a
Okay.
spaceship's favorite type of music?
Ambient space music?
Techno thrust. It's got a great beat that you can blast to.
Oh man. That's enough thrust for me.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh man. So I've been pulling a few more strings and found a couple more absolutely groaner jokes from the deep fields of physics, astronomy, and cosmology. Ready for this quantum link and truly bad jokes?
Oh, I couldn't be more ready, Jay. I've got my grown meter primed. Let's hit the singularity of silliness. Hit me with the first five.
Okay. I decided to write a joke about a singularity, but I can only get it down to one line.
Oh.
Okay, what do you got for us, Mike?
Why do physicists like donuts?
I don't know. They have holes.
Fascinating toruses of sugar and grease. That's some topology humor for you.
Okay. All right. Black holes. What does a black hole say when it orders a large pizza?
Don't know. What does it say, Jay?
I'll have everything, but please, no toppings that would alter my mass to a critical density. All right.
A group of protons walks into a bar. The bartender says, "Hey, you guys have a positive attitude?" And a neutron walks in behind him, and the bartender says, "For you, no charge."
Oh, I wish I had got that joke. All right. So a team of astronomers finds a planet made entirely of money. What do they call it?
Don't know. What do they call it?
The Cassiopeia system.
There are planets that rain diamonds. Extremely
Yeah,
high pressure.
that's true. Or at least we think it's true.
We think it's true.
All right, your turn.
I tried to catch some fog to study, but I missed.
Oh, that's kind of terrestrial for
Is.
okay. All right. Okay, What's a cosmologist's favorite type of coffee?
I don't know. Tell me.
A mocha, because it's dark and it's creamy and slightly sweet, and it also contains caffeine, which stimulates their brain to think about the mysteries of the universe, and on and on and on and on. That's a long story.
Why do neutrinos cross the road, Jay?
I don't know, Mike. Tell me.
To see if they can do it without interacting with any cars on the other side, including the ones that might have just passed about a mo moment ago.
So we could turn a bus into a neutrino detector. Okay. What? I met an astronomer who was always late. They said, "Hey, my internal clock is set to side real time. What's your excuse?" All right.
A physicist, a chemist, and an astronomer are looking at a black cat in a dark room. The physicist says, "The room is empty. There's no possible way to observe a black cat in this dark room." The chemist says, "Actually, I smell sulfur and ammonia. There's probably a cat box in here, too." And the astronomer says, "Wait, I see a small point of light. Maybe if I stare at it for a few hours, I can confirm it's a cat's eye."
Oh, there's a lot of cat in the dark room jokes that I've heard recently, but I'm gonna go leave it at that one. So yeah, kind of like April 1st, have you ever played any good practical jokes?
Just actually pretty lame practical jokes. None that I would want to recount here.
Okay. Well, I have when I was working for a news agency for Reuters News, and so on April 1st, I came into the office at like 5 a.m. before anybody was in the office, and I went around to each cubicle, and this was back in the 1990s. I went back to each cubicle in each office. And back then, we had computer mice that had little balls in them, the roller balls. And so that's how the mice would work. And so I took the balls out of all the mice of all the company's computers and put the balls around wherever in the people's office or by their computers or something like that, so they could eventually find it. And so when everybody came into the office, and of course the IT board lit up with everybody saying, "Why isn't my mouse working today?" And so I got in a lot of trouble for that from the IT department. But that was one. So anyway, let's go back to jokes. And let's see, I think I got a couple more here. Why did the astrophysicist get a ticket while driving?
Why?
He was going 80 miles an hour in a 65 zone, but he tried to argue because of the Doppler effect, the red light actually looked green. Okay. What do you got?
Hey, did you hear that Canada's starting a space program?
I thought they already had one.
Yeah, well, they're calling this new spaceship the Apollo G.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for that joke. All right. How many astronomers does it take to change a light bulb?
don't know, Jay, how many?
None. They actually prefer the dark, unless the light bulb is a type 1A supernova, and then they'll spend 10 years measuring exactly how much it dimmed.
Oh,
I know
well, you
that's
know, that
right on.
reminds me of the joke that our friend Gax sent in. How many astronomers, German astronomers, no, wait a second, I got it here. How many German planets does it take to screw in a light bulb?
Nine.
Nine.
I just guessed
All right. Okay.
that.
Hey,
All right.
I got a couple more here.
Okay.
Why do space rocks taste better than Earth rocks?
Because we're here.
They're a little meatier.
Oh man. All right. What's an astrophotographer's favorite type of jewelry?
I don't know.
A Batinoff mask. I know we got to focus here. okay. I asked this telescope why it was so upset, and it said, "I just feel like everyone is looking right through me lately."
Oh.
You have another one?
On the first day of astronaut training, I threw up. I asked the instructor, "Is this normal?" He said, "No, not during a written exam."
Okay. So, why don't stars ever go to college?
Why?
Because they already have a million degrees.
Oh, nice.
All right. You have any more?
No, I'm tapped out.
Okay.
Probably for the best.
I got one or two more. All right. What's the difference between a large pizza and an astrophysicist?
I don't know.
A large pizza can feed a family of four. Okay. All right. We're going to bring this to a well-justified end here. It's just sort of like when I say when my mount telescope mount stops tracking, I've reached my limit. All right. One last knock-knock joke. Okay. Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Parallel universe.
Parallel universe who?
Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Parallel universe.
Oh shit, this is never gonna end, is it?
Oh, I actually have a few more, but I think we better wrap this up. Wait. Okay, one more knock knock joke. Knock knock.
Who's there?
Dark matter.
Dark matter who?
I'd tell you, but I'm 85% sure you won't be able to see the punchline.
Oh, nice.
Okay, I know, Mike. You love cosmology. It's one of your favorite subjects, so
Yes,
I thought you'd really like
very
that one.
much.
Okay, let's wrap this up. Let's thank all of our listeners for putting up with this podcast, and please send in your bad astronomy jokes, and we'll put them we'll read a couple of those on the air next week if you send those in, and you can always be sure to like and subscribe this podcast if you'd like to hear more, and let us know what you'd like to hear more about. And don't forget to check out our websites, wildernessvagabonds.com and skylapser.com, and our YouTube channels. And those are under the Mike Lewinsky's name and under my Skylapser name. And our intro music is Fanfare for Space by Kevin MacLeod from the YouTube Audio Library. And from the Deep Sage 9 Observatory, this is Jay Schaefer and
Mike Lewinsky.
wishing you all clear skies.